folks. The Field and Garden Podcast is honored to be partnering with the Growing for Market magazine. They have been publishing practical ideas and information for direct market flower and vegetable growers for over 31 years. All the articles are written by farmers who get their hands dirty and know what they're doing. The magazine is still on the same mission as when the Flower Farmer book author Lynn Bozinski founded this magazine back in 1992 to connect growers with the best ideas from other growers. There is dedicated flower content in every magazine, a decade's worth of back issues, and over 1,600 archived articles from writers like Aaron Benzenkang, Gretel Adams, Pamela and Frank Arnowski, and Jonathan and Megan Lease, all available on the website. With 10 new issues every year available on paper, digital, or both, you're guaranteed to find something to fine-tune your farm in Growing for Market. So if you do farmers markets, CSA, farm stands, pick your own, florist sales, or wholesaling, whether you're a commercial grower or you just want to grow like one, subscribe to Growing for Market for the nitty-gritty details of growing, marketing, and the business of local farming. And I have a special offer for you. Use the coupon code WORKSHOP to get 25% off any subscription to the original Farmer to Farmer magazine at growingformarket.com. Hey friends, welcome back to another Field and Garden podcast. It is your friend and host, Lisa Mason Ziegler, and thanks so much for dropping in. And, you know, I am, like so many people, right, kind of organizing and cleaning up and straightening. Well, y'all, I am doing that out to the building, my office, that's upstairs in our flower farming work building, which has kind of turned into a big studio. It's a pretty large building, and it's downstairs is where you've probably seen on many of my lives where all the flowers are, and that's where the cooler is and the grow room, and there's a restroom down there, and it's a big, nice, open space. Well, upstairs is like an apartment-size big room. I mean, it's a pretty nice space. Anyway, that's been my office for 10 or 12, maybe, how long has that been? It's actually more like 15 years. So it went through a lot of stages of uses. So in the very beginning, it was where I was able to move my little growing business out of my upstairs bedroom in my bungalow home. I needed a space. You know, I was starting to sell flowers. I had paperwork. Of course, back then, everything was paper. So that's where it started. It was my home office, basically upstairs in this work building. But as the gardener's workshop started to grow, then all of a sudden, Suzanne had a desk up there also as we started. And then we brought Kelly, my niece, on board about 12 or 13 years ago. I'm not sure about these timelines. I do know that Kelly has been with us that long. But when she first started working for me, she was primarily a seed starter. And then she kind of has evolved to where she is today, where she heads up our whole tech department, course department. Anyway, so then Kelly had a desk up there. So we now had three desks. Then as the business began to grow, we brought a fourth person on that needed a desk up there. So there has been, and I then began, after we moved the gardener's workshop off the farm to a business building that's away from here, we just took all the stuff that we needed, and my office was kind of left with two decades of my stuff, notes, conference notes, ideas. I found a partial manuscript for a book that never got off the ground. I found so much great stuff, y'all. And as I'm going through it, it's given me so many ideas to talk about stuff. And so today I want to talk about what I'm calling my do's and don'ts list. For me personally, I'm not suggesting that you should follow this. This is just kind of the do's and don'ts of flower farming. If I were to start today based on what my experience was of the way that I handled it, right? So first out of the gate is that I would want to bring to the forefront of my mind that to become a flower farmer, what is that? Define what that is to you, because there are so many different versions that I think of and that I've heard of and that I hear people talk of. But here's the bottom line. To grow cut flowers for the lowest investment and to sell it for as much as you can. I mean, I'm not implying that you should overprice it. I'm just saying that you start in, get in low, and come out high. If it cost you 25 cents to grow that stem, then for you to sell it for a lot more than that. That's what covers the cost of business, y'all. To provide quality and value and volume and to be able to really start a business, because I never really thought about it. And here's the other thing that I think you need to really consider that I didn't back before I had to face all of this is when you're a flower farmer, basically you only have flowers to sell to pay all your bills. Those are the bills that you're going to have next year that you don't have today, perhaps, you know, whether it's the space to do it in or a new vehicle or a new piece of equipment or a place to do it or to have more land. So even though you may not feel like you have all these high expenses yet, you still need to get in low and sell your flowers at the market value to be able to run a successful business. And you know, when you want, and so here's a new thought, is, and my dad used to be really, remind me of this often, when you want big things, like a flower farm, it's hard. You have to be willing to suffer to get there. And I think I've mentioned before that when I was delivering, when we were selling flowers to two supermarket chains, we delivered those flowers early on Friday mornings for them to have them for Friday and Saturday weekend business, you know. And I would deliver from Williamsburg, which is about 25 minutes, I'm just going to say north of us, although I don't think it's exactly north, to Virginia Beach, which is 45 minutes south of us in the complete opposite direction. So it was an all-day affair when you left to go to supermarkets, deliveries. So I often would call, especially after my mom passed away, my dad and I talked on the phone a lot. And one of the things I would do is when I was on my way home from Virginia Beach, which would happen to be kind of around noontime on Friday, because I started at about 6 o'clock in the morning. I mean, the traffic coming from Virginia Beach back to Newport News is horrendous. If you've ever heard of the Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel, it's like you just can only count on one thing. You can't count on it. So always when I would be coming back, traffic would be dead stopped, you know, 5 miles from the tunnel, which means you creep the whole way. Well, that's when I would call my dad. I would call him when we were in this kind of standstill, and I would be belly aching about whatever the failure, the screw up, or the problem of the day. And he would always say, you know, if you want something big, you have to be willing to suffer through it. And that's the bottom line, friends. You're supposed to suffer. It's supposed to be hard. If it wasn't hard, everybody would be doing it, right? So if you want big things, it's hard, and you have to be willing to suffer to get there. And I don't mean suffering for a day, friends, or even a year. I still suffer. I'm 25 years in. because I'm always, your business is always growing, changing, tweaking constantly. And every time you do that, there's a whole new line of sufferings available to you. And then here's another really good one. If you don't quit, you'll make it. Oh my goodness. I see and I hear from my students over and over again. I mean, they fail one time and they think they're a failure and that a flower farming business won't work for them where they live. I mean, you just can't quit. Friends, if you don't fail every single day at least once, you're not trying hard enough. If you don't quit, you will ultimately make it if you want it bad enough. And so I was doing a podcast, actually talk with Jonathan Lease of Springforth Farm earlier this week. And I just really, Jonathan and Megan are a young family, smart farmers, super smart farmers. I mean, I was so impressed when they brought their course that we published, the No-Till Microscale Flower Farm. And I was so impressed with the content of their course, but I was even more impressed as I have become lifelong friends with them now and talk to them from time to time and hear what they're doing and how they're handling situations. And so he and I were chit-chatting before we did this podcast the other day, talking about, the problems of cover cropping, particularly related to no-till or challenges. And I said, Jonathan, I'm finding 25 years in, this is our 25th anniversary year, that 2023 is for the Gardener's Workshop, that each year it just gets easier and easier. And I said, it's so hard for people to believe that Bobo and I literally only work on the farm at farming 2 days a week. And that's only about a 6-hour day. She comes at 8 and leaves at 2. And we manage what basically I would guess is about a half acre working cutting garden, producing a ton of flowers in that a little amount of time. But that's a result, y'all, of 25 years of wisdoms, experiences, and acquiring the tools and equipment that make it quick and easy for us. So the only way to get comfortable and to make flower farming livable, to make it lower stress, is to do it over and over and over again. You learn that all these things that have your britches in a knot right now, 2 years from now, you're going to forget totally about that because you're going to master it. And what Jonathan shared, he said, well, for us, and I totally agree with what he said, is you learn to let it go. When you fail, like right now, let's just say that you are one of the people that I just read about the other day that planted your new flower farmer and you jumped straight to tulips because you think they're so beautiful and you're sure you can sell them even though you really don't have any customers yet and you don't necessarily have all the pieces to successfully grow tulips, whether that's knowledge or a cooler or, as I mentioned, a list of customers waiting for them. You're like got a knot in your gut because they're all of a sudden starting to pop up and you're thinking, oh my gosh, it's only January and my market doesn't start till June. What am I going to do with all those flowers? Well, what you come to realize is that you learn to let go of your big mistakes like that. There is nothing you can do right, except for finding customers, right? Red flare, if you grew tulips, you better have customers typically much earlier than you normally do or a way to sit on them. And so Jonathan shared that they've learned to roll with the punches of their failures and screw-ups And what that leads you to, as he said, is to have plan B. I always have a backup plan for the backup plan. And as I've gotten more and more experience, I realize what some of those backup plans are that just allow me to be a better business person, because I realize having a backup plan allows me to move forward in business more. So the only way to get comfortable and livable with being a flower farmer is to do it, and to realize that mistakes happen every single day, and you have to learn how to create space between that stress and your reaction. You have to learn that that is a part of business. The road to success is paved with dollar bill marks and stress and stresses. And you have to train yourself how to react to those or not react. And that's the way you get to become a successful business person. Things that used to light me on fire 10 years ago, now I say, you know, now I can calmly consider, as I'm listening at a staff meeting, let's just say, and something will come up that has somebody very upset, and it's like, I'll listen, and instead of getting involved in that emotional reaction, I see the solution clearly, and that's what doing it does for you. And here is one that I see that it took me a long time to swallow, was to claim the failures. When I fail, you know, I can definitely look back now and it's like, no wonder I failed. Failures are our fault, y'all. Very few failures are not avoidable. Meaning, because you've done something and failed, people say, well, where I live, that won't work. Well, I don't always agree with that. You just haven't found the right way. I mean, there's almost always a workaround or something that can be changed. We have to claim our failures. And it's like, you just haven't found the right door. You're not knocking on the right door yet. And to have that power to get up and do it again and again and again is really, really hard, because it's really hard to say, well, that was my fault. And looking back, I can totally, completely, I mean, I can still do that about last week. Holy cow. And that's what it takes. So here is a really, really big one. If you want to be a flower farmer, you must find customers, grow flowers, and sell them, y'all. You know, Dave Dowling famously talks about, if you just want to grow lots of flowers and you're not selling them, that just means you're a gardener with a lot of flowers. You have to figure out the rest of this game. Selling them is what puts you on the other side of the fence. And it is not an easy fence to climb, as I mentioned earlier. It's hard. It is really, really hard. And here's one of the things that, you know, I think that people, we always, I think it's natural for us to overvalue ourselves and our stuff when we're first starting out. You know, if you don't have any customers for the flowers you're growing, your flowers are really worth nothing. I mean, and I'm sure I'll hear blowback over that. But as far as a good to sell, if you don't have people buying your flowers, they aren't worth anything, right? So you have to do whatever it takes to get customers. And, you know, one of the strategies that I learned from Pamela and Frank Arnowski way back in the beginning that I think really helped me was they talked about taking not one or two bunches of flowers. I wanted to sell to florists, so that's why I'm talking about going to florists. Not taking one or two bunches of free samples into them, to walk in there with an armload of gorgeous, abundant flowers. They also took their kids, which they felt really helped. Of course, I didn't have a child to take. So to walk in there with an armload of gorgeous flowers, lay them up on the counter, flowers facing the customer, and say, I'm Lisa Mason Ziegler, and I am starting out growing cut flowers, and I wanted to bring you the samples of my flowers by for you to have to see what the quality is, if I know how I condition them, and to just experience my flowers. I'm going to be sending you a list every Tuesday morning, if you'd like it, with a list of what I have, how much I have, how much it costs, and when I'd be bringing it to you. I'll call you in just a few minutes after I send the list. I hear people saying, oh my gosh, I would never give away that many flowers. You are worth so much more. Your flowers are worth so much. Well, friends, they aren't worth doodiddly if you don't have customers to buy them. So you have to do what you have to do to get the customers. If I wanted a bunch of business subscriptions, drop-offs, you better believe I'd fix the same size that I was going to be selling, voluptuous, gorgeous bouquets, and deliver them to offices that I wanted to sell to with a tag hanging from them that says, these will be available starting in June, limited availability. Here's the website, order your subscription now, or whatever. You're not worth anything until you actually have customers willing to pay you for it. And I think that's a big one, and I think people really do tend to over. Now, once you got customers, there's a different story there, but you have to do something. If you don't have customers, they aren't worth anything, right? So if I wanted to stay stuck starting a flower farming business, this is what I would do. I'd start tomorrow. Don't do it today. I hear this over and over and over again, and I was kind of stuck there. I was so fortunate to have a man as my partner that gently pushed me over the edge to get started. So if you want to know how to not ever have a successful flower farm, number one, start tomorrow. And here's another one that I find, particularly as a person that teaches courses, is number two is to read lots of books and take courses and then do nothing with them. Just study them, prepare, plan. Just stay in that mode. That is the best way to never start a flower farm. And then number three that I find, and this is probably a hole that is so easy for everyone to fall into, is to take advice from people who don't have a successful flower farm, who haven't done it. You know, I mean, that's like, if you wanted to make a lot of money and you were trying to figure out how to do it, you'd ask your friends that have no money how to do it, right? That's a simple way to do it. I heard somebody say that. And so you have to really don't waste your money, your brain space, and your time and your morale taking advice from people that haven't done it. Here's a great example. So oftentimes people will, even in my course closed groups, people will post a picture of what's eating my plant. And I often, depending on what time limit I have, I want to say when I see that is, why are you wasting your time asking other people that are just like us that don't know? Go straight to the horse, which would be, in my opinion, if you're in the United States anyway, go straight to your extension agent office. You know, they're sitting down there with 50 books and resources and online resources where they can instantly look it up and then advise you for what the norm is in your area. They're familiar with all of that. Why waste time asking other people that don't probably know any more than you know, right? So, I mean, that's just an example of pick your resources carefully because you don't have a lot of time to waste, whether you're talking about something that's eating your plants or a harvest question. go to good resources. So you need to go to the people that have actually done it. And then the other thing that I think was really helpful and a big part of why I'm successful. Sorry, coffee break, y'all. Flower farming business is particularly lonely, if you ask me. I think all entrepreneurial businesses are lonely. If you're doing it right, it is a lonely place. I mean, you have to do a lot of work. And flower farming, I think, is particularly hard. Any farming, because you're hot and exhausted, physically exhausted part of the year also. And that really makes it hard. I mean, it is so easy to get weepy for me. I can remember, golly day, 15 years ago, hot and tired in July, just feeling like the world was going to end, you know? It can really be that way. So for me, having a life partner that is either directly involved in your business and wanting to do it right along beside you, or they're cheering you on when you come in at night. I mean, and what does that mean? Cheering me on means that Steve Ziegler did laundry for 10 years. If Steve had not just stepped in and started doing laundry during my high production years, we would have had no clean underwear at this house. That was cheering me on, right? And his willingness to on the nights that I was supposed to be cooking dinner that I didn't, because, you know, we ran into a problem and I was still cutting flowers when I can remember him pulling in the driveway at dusk, because he also owns a business, right? Pulling in, he was just as tired. He's a plumber, y'all. That is hard work. And I'm still out in the field cutting flowers back in the days before I had figured all this out. And him being willing to come in the house and figure out something for dinner without belly aching, and he just did it. Wasn't always the greatest, but he did it. And that's what's cheering on. That's the kind of partner. I mean, if you're a young person and you're still shopping for a partner, that's what I'd be looking for. Somebody that wants to come alongside you and either have the same goals, not really goals, but have the same future in mind, or are willing to support you to actually do it, right? And here's another thing that, and I'm sure he'll blow back over this too, but I am all about planning. I had all those papers in my office, right? I'm a list maker, writer. But I think that getting caught up in the planning, spreadsheet, deep, all that stuff, allows people to stay stuck. It is your habits of today that you have to work on, and build your goals around your habits. I call that a realistic goal. So for me, it's like I know that I have to have structured days. I have to have a clutter-free environment to actually work. That's why my garden is kind of a neat thing, y'all. I mean, it's not that I don't have any weeds, but I have found ways to keep my garden neat appearing because I need it to be neat to be able to actually focus and work. And Bobo is that same way. I realized that just the other day. Bobo's, you know, in knee deep in seed starting right now. And so let's see, today is Saturday. Thursday, she came in to do a bunch of seed starting, and there were a lot of things out of place in the building. And because I'd been doing stuff, and she had to take about an hour to get the building back in her working order before she could sit down and do seed starting. And I understand that. I used to think that that was wasted time, but it's not, because then she sits down and goes to town. And having habits, you know, my weeks are so structured. We talk about that. In flower farming school, it's like on Mondays, I do this. On Tuesdays, I do this. On Wednesdays, I do this. Thursdays, I do this. On Fridays, I do this. And guess what? Saturdays and Sundays are family life days. And people know that, and the people that work for me and my family knew that. I mean, it's like, I think with Flower Farm, and because most of us do that at our home, people think they can drop in anytime, or, you know, because I'm in the city, that's really a problem. Meaning you have lots of people that can, you know, just pop in at any time. And my family really came to learn that on Mondays and Thursdays in season, do not even come here. Those are harvest days. And we are racing the heat and sun all the time. I mean, we start as early as possible. And that's what I'm talking about. Making habits are what get you the successful business. If I hadn't been so structured, I mean, y'all, I am dyslexic, learning disabled, and ADHD. And if I didn't have this structure, I'd still be sitting here making lists 25 years later. Literally. So you have to have habits today to get you to that successful. And then I want to just say a final note. And I remember saying this myself. I think I've mentioned it before. I come from a really strong entrepreneurial family. We have some incredibly successful people in our family. And I can remember being at one of their homes way back. So I started Flower Farming in 1998. I launched the Gardener's Workshop version of the selling stuff and teaching people for money in 2005. And I can remember being at, and that was how I launched a direct sales company. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice all of a sudden. Where we would do basically home parties, but we did workshops in people's homes, teaching them how to garden, and then we had the stuff they needed to do it with, right? Well, I was at this one of my cousins, Steve's cousin's homes, doing that, and her husband popped his head out and said, you know, this is just such a dynamite idea. I think, you know, what you're doing is so great, da 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 da. And I said, hey, I just want to do what I'm doing right now. It's all the back stuff that is making me crazy. I don't want to do book work. I don't want to do all the other, figuring it out, the cash flow, the money part. I just want to be out here teaching people how to do it and handing them the stuff. And he said to me then, every entrepreneur feels that way. But being an entrepreneur means you have to include that. So you have to want it more than you hate doing those things that you need to do to get there. I hear every day in our closed Facebook groups that the planning's making them crazy, the no customer part, finding customers, the selling is making them crazy. All they want to do is stay home and farm and play with their dogs. Well, we all feel that way, friends. You're not any different. It's not that you are any less of an entrepreneur than anybody else. That is being an entrepreneur, loving one part more than you hate the other part, so you do them. Does that make sense? I mean, oh my gosh. It's kind of crazy. But I also want to remind you that the one thing that can carry you through all of these steps, and I still work on this today, I mean, big time, is to learn how to slow the reaction down when you face issues. Meaning if it's a problem, your first reaction is, oh my gosh, you have to build a wall between that and your reaction. So you have longer to crawl over before the reaction gets to where it's going. Does that give you a visual? And the example that I heard somebody use is a thermos, how it's hot on the inside and it's not affected by the outside air. You have to thicken your walls, your reactions. And I could say this to myself every stinking day, y'all. So that's what I'm thinking is kind of some of the do's and don'ts that I wished I would if I had to do a replay of my business life, these are things that I wished I'd have known about, things I'd have focused on, because let's be honest, learning how to grow flowers in any kind of volume, even a small volume, is a learning curve. Then if you're also starting a business and you're not a business person, that is a huge, that's like trying to eat an elephant in one bite. So these are all normal issues and problems. So friends, if you're enjoying the Field and Garden podcast, you can help me so much if you're listening to this over on my YouTube channel. Subscribe so you don't miss a future episode. Give us a like, and that helps us so much. And if you're listening on your favorite podcast app, please drop a review. And it doesn't have to be but a few words. 4 words qualifies. And the more reviews we get, the more people they show the podcast to. And I just so appreciate all of you and all your comments. And I read all of the reviews. And yes, I read yours too. I read them all, the good and the bad. And, you know, this podcast is brought to you by thegardenersworkshop.com, which is our platform that includes tons of resources. Our sister podcast, which is Seed Talk with Lisa and Lane, our online videos, a library of our online courses, as well as our garden shop that sells the same tools, seeds, and supplies that you hear me mention and that I use here on our farm, as well as my books. And friends, thanks for dropping in, and until we meet again, ciao. Hey friends, I wanted to share with you a super encouraging note that I received during Christmas from Jennifer of Illinois. And I just can't tell you how much these kind of notes just fuel me. And I just wanted to share it with you. It's super sweet. It says, I'll be starting my 5th season in 2023 and wanted to thank you again for inspiring me to keep going and to keep my outfit realistic and manageable. Learning from you is a privilege. And then it had loved Jennifer. But in there, she had a little laminated card that I am actually putting on my desk to join a couple other type things like this that I have in there. And it says, when I wasn't sure if I could keep going because of how hard it was, you were there to show me it wasn't going to be easy, but it was going to be worth it. Friends, I just can't tell you how true that is. Thank you, Jennifer, for your kind words, and I'm sharing them in the hopes that they're going to help other people know to keep on going.